We were discussing last time we said how there's the concept called uman kona bishvach kli, that a worker can be kona with from the, what should we call it, from the appreciation in what he produces, what he manufactures. He has a chelik in it. So when you buy it from him, if you hold uman kona bishvach kli, so now you have to take your kli to the mikveh. And we said no. Because you, the Jew, own the raw material, you, the Jew, own the keli. So therefore, it has a Shem Yisrael through and through. A Jewish title doesn't require tevila. It's a question. Some hold, Raman holds, Machmir, if it was broken enough that it's not a kli anymore and he makes it for you, then we are concerned that uman kone bishvach kli. So just in one sentence, Shulchan Aruch only cares about who owns the kli. That's all Shulchan Aruch, the materials, the kli, that's all we care about for Shulchan Aruch. And for the Rama, all we care about is who owns the material and who made it. Both of them matter. We have Chacham Nitzani coming on. Chacham Nitzani is here too, also hanging out in SBM, it seems, Baruch Hashem. Wow, good to see you, Chacham Nitzani. Glad you're doing well. And
This is Nirala.
just a quick chazara, one more time. According to Shulchan Aruch, all that matters in manufacture and production, repairs, is who owns this piece of metal. Nothing else. You don't care who doesn't own it. Doesn't matter. Whereas for the Rama, it's either who works on it or who owns it. Uman kone bishvach kli and ownership are both important factors, and therefore he'll be machnir both ways. Question of Berachot for another time. That's really a summary. Yeah? That's really a summary of what we said thus far. Now, I want to tell you an amazing chidush with respect to factories, an amazing chidush of the Chochmah Adam. The Chochmah Adam lived in Vilna 300 years ago.
Rabbi, maybe you can mute everyone.
Joe. You can hear the people around you, that's all. Okay, great. Okay, wonderful. If Ari, you're not listening with headphones, and Joe can just come sit next to you. Okay, whatever, it's all good. But it's okay. Anyway, the Chochmah Adam has an amazing chidush. I want to show it to you in a chart. Join me on my notes. You guys can see clearly or not. I know you have your phones and not laptops, so it's not going to be as clear. So I'll try to zoom in a little bit more. We have a table. And in this table, we have x-axis is who's the owner. Y-axis is who are the workers. If you have a kli that's been made owned by Jews and made by Jews, then 100% no tevila is required. If you have a kli that's owned by non-Jews and worked on by non-Jews, then 100% tevila is required. It's this diagonal that has a machloket. When a Jew owns it and a non-Jew produces it or works on it, then Shulchan Aruch says, we don't care who worked on it. It is patur from Tevila. The Rama says, no, we're machmir. And the Chochmah Adam says, well, look at it. It's a safek. It's a machloket. It's a safek. When a non-Jew owns a kli and a Jew works on it, the Shulchan Aruch says, of course you need Tevila. And the Rama says, no, it's a safek. Because maybe the Jew working on it will get him a chelek in it. And therefore, the Chochmah Adam says that's a safek. So what does the Chochmah Adam say now?
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Forgive me, I didn't go to yeshiva. Who's the Chochmah Adam?
Chochmah Adam, Rav Avraham Danziger, pretty sure. Rav Avraham Danziger, he lived in Vilna 300 years ago. He wrote a book called Chaye Adam. And it's a book on all of Orach Chaim, very Kitzur Shulchan Aruch style, except it's not Kitzur, it's very long. Very Piskei Dinim, 1-1-1-1-1-1, all halachot of Orach Chaim. Then he wrote another sefer called Chochmah Adam, which is on Yoreh Deyah, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9-10, halacha in every single case in Yoreh Deyah. So he was a mechutan with the Vilna Gaon. He was a great posek and also a businessman. And the only reason he wrote his sefer was to show the world that businessmen can learn, teach, and paskin Torah also. That was his whole raison for writing the Sefer, Chaye Adam and Chochmat Adam. And it became very popular. It's popular ad hayom, 300 years straight of Paskening Halacha. He died in 1820, born in 1748, almost 250 years, whatever. Extremely popular Sefer throughout the Jewish world.
Harav.
Yeah.
So when like Adarama, sorry, for the non-Jewish, the workers, I don't know if I'm reading the chart correctly. Mm-hmm. The Chochmat Adam says Safek.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning what? Meaning that there is a tevila without a bracha, or meaning no tevila?
So in those case, in Safek will mean right now it's going to be tevila, and probably without a bracha. Whether or not there's a bracha is not 100% our focus tonight, but he's looking at it and saying, hey, there's a Safek here, right?
Yeah.
And he says it by the other diagonal also.
Right.
And based on that, he says an amazing chidush. He says, you're living in Europe, and there are merchants going around with kelim from factories. He says, if the factory is owned by a Jew, or there are Jews employed in the factory, but it's owned by a non-Jew, either or, as long as you hit Jewish on one axis, the Chochmat Adam says, patur from tevila. No tevila required, Ostad, at all. That is the chidush of the Chochmat Adam. And he says you can rely on that and use the kli without tevila at all. And the shopkeepers, the Jewish shopkeepers who are buying from these factories and having it delivered to them, have to make sure that they inform their buyers, don't take this to the mikveh and recite a beracha. If you want to take it and not recite a beracha, because hey, you know, it's a safek, you want it to be machmir, fine. But don't recite a beracha because it's always a safek. So that Arya hit that point on the head. But he went further, he said, mutar to use it also, because it's a safek derabanan. And therefore it's mutar to be mekel. It's a safek derabanan in the first case, in all of those situations. That is the immense chidush of the Chochmat Adam. Now the question is the Chochmat Adam correct? The Chochmat Adam is quoted by the Pitchei Tshuva, who is the classic commentary on the bottom of the page in Yoredeya. You always have, on Shulchan Aruch, you have two commentaries on the side, you know, Magen Avraham and Taz in Or Chaim. You have the Shach and the Taz in Yoredeya and Choshen Mishpat. Also the Sma in Choshen Mishpat. And you have on the bottom, you have someone who collects all the teshuvot. The Pitchei Tshuva collects all the teshuvot svarim of his day. And he quotes this Chochmat Adam, l'halacha. The Zivchei Tzedek, Chacham Abdullah Sumech, right behind me here. The Rebbe of the Ben Ishchai, Zivchei Tzedek also quotes this Chochmat Adam. L'halacha. However, there are those who disagree. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Chassidus Munkach or Minkach. Minkach was a town in Hungary, a shtetl in Hungary. And they had a Chassidus that's still alive today and well in Brooklyn, in Borough Park. And there was a great Minkacher Rebbe years ago. His name escapes me at the moment. I think it was Shalom. And he commissioned a sefer on Yoredeya called Darkei Teshuvah. He basically runs through all of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch and condenses it all very nicely together. It's called Darkei Teshuvah. So Darkei Teshuvah brings those who disagree with this Chochmat Adam and argues that, in fact, when you don't know where this kli is coming from, the Chochmat Adam said, unless you know that it's owned by non-Jews and employs non-Jews, you don't do tefillah at all. They go the other direction and they say, no, even if you don't know where it's coming from, you don't know are they Jewish, you don't know they're not Jewish, you don't know nothing, tevilah with a beracha. Because where do you live? You live in Chutz La'aretz. How many Jewish factories are there? How many places are there that are employed by Jews? Not so many. The rove, the majority are owned and or staffed by non-Jews. And if that's the case, You can't not do tefillah. Of course you have to do tefillah. It's a safek. You have to be machmir. And in Baghdad, there are those who argue, as Talmud of the Zivchei Tzedek says, we are matbil everything. We don't know where it comes from. We take it to the mikveh. And that's what they do since they saw this Darkei Tshuva. Of course, all this is only relevant if the merchant, the middleman, the distributor is a Jew. If the distributor is not Jewish, that's a different issue we'll talk about next week. It's assumably, we'll talk about it a little bit in a second, if a Jew sells a kli to a non-Jew and buys it back, you have to do tefillah again. So if the distributor is not Jewish, then this kills everything. But assuming the distributor is Jewish, there is a big machloket now. What do you do with the factories? Do you follow this Chochmat Adam, or do you say, no, you go by the Rov? And Rov factories are owned by non-Jews. More than that, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the whole Chochmat Adam is strange. The Chochmat Adam is relying on Uman Kone Veshvach Kli, that an artist and a craftsman acquires a part of the appreciation of the Kli. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, Baruch Hashem, right here on my left. Rav Moshe says, Uman Kone Veshvach Kli doesn't apply in a factory. Uman Kone Veshvach Kli applies in a mom and pop store. You go to the shoe store and you ask him to fix your shoes. A factory? A corporation? Those people aren't paid per shoe as if they are going to get a chelik in the shoe. They're paid per hour. They're schira yom. They're paid per day or per week. They're not kablanim. A kablan is a contractor, is paid per unit. Only an uman kablan is kone bishvachli, someone who acquires something through the units that he makes. So now you could argue, well, it depends on the factory now. Okay, good. But it depends now. It's not so chalak anymore. And it's not so simple and done. And Rav David Cohen from the CRC writes how even the Chochmat Adam, it's not so clear he says this in every case. His huge kula that all the factories, according to Chochmat Adam, you literally can wipe away Tevilat Kelim from so many things right now. But he says, no. The Chochmat Adam was talking about, like Rav Moshe said, a case where you're paid per unit. He was talking about a case where you literally had handymen in the factory working on the conveyor belt and building things. Whereas Rav Moshe argues, additionally, that a factory has machines. Machines are making the kelim, not human beings. So you're not paying the workers to make things, you're paying them to push buttons for you. So Rav David Cohen thinks the Chochmat Adam agrees to that as well. And he's talking about a case where you actually have people putting things together. So now it's going to depend also on the production line. How involved are the workers in the production, and how much are they just manning the machines that actually produce things?
What's the difference between the worker pushing the button and the worker swinging the hammer? You're going to say the hammer did the work? No, the worker had to program the machine. He had to build the machine to do it.
Right. Chacham Eliassi, you are a tremendous Gaon. This has been subject to Machloket for the past 200 years. Pushing a button. When you push a button and you say, L'shem mitzvat matzah, and it puts all the matzahs through the oven, does that make it l'shma? Is that dushmira? Does that mean that you're making it or that someone else is making it? It's big, big Machloket. In so many places in Halakha. And when it comes to Yayin Nesach, it matters. When it comes to Shabbat, it matters. When it comes to all sorts of things in Kashrut, does my button pushing constitute a ma'aseh, the adayim, I did it with my hands, or is it just a grama, an indirect action? Rav Moshe in this teshuvah is assuming that at least with respect to umanut, with respect to using his trade, his crafts, his craftiness, the goy's action of pushing a button does not count as a ma'asev yadayim. He thinks it's more of a grumma of sorts, it seems. I was wondering the same thing. How is Rav Moshe taking a stance here? Is this a universal idea? Is it local to this point? I don't know. I'm not sure. But this is one of the two arguments that Rav Moshe makes. That number one, it's a factory with machines, and the workers are just assisting. And number two, they're paid per hour, not per unit. But in Achinami, if they were paid per unit, you would talk about it. In Achinami, if there weren't any machines, you would talk about it. And Rav David Cohen says that's exactly what he was talking about, the Chochmat Adam. But he would agree in a modern factory if, you know.
But you can argue that also.
That what?
You can argue that just because he's not getting paid, I'll pay you per unit. No, that worker has a quota. If he does not work on so many, he loses his job. Right. So in essence, he is working on each one.
So you have to wonder. I don't know. This is the Choshen Mishpat that I don't know. How do you figure out all these contractual agreements? I make it tonight with you. I'll pay you per hour if you produce this much per week. How do you measure that? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. So you need a real Dayan for these types of things. There's a little bit of a disconnect sometimes when it comes to Sheilut u'Tshuvot between the myriad of different cases in Choshen Mishpat that could exist in terms of interest, in terms of this contract, and what the halakha says, because the poskim aren't always aware of all of the different cases. One of my friends was talking to me, just like shorting with stocks. Poskim didn't understand, so they can't really write about it. You have to, is wiring a kinyan or not? Wiring money to a bank, is that a kinyan ma'ot, that I give you money, or it's nothing? Well, lots of nafkaminas. Can you charge interest on a wire? We have to discuss it, Bezrat Hashem.
You can say the same thing about handing somebody a check. If you hand them a check, the check is a piece of paper that's worthless, but it deposits in a bank because it's just a note.
So every kolo guy has had a check in his life. So they have to figure out, is a check money, or is it just a shtar? Or is it harsha? It's machloket Rav Avadya and Chacham and Tzion HaBashal, actually. How do you view a check? And nafkamina, can you go back? Does it count and give the money? It's a kinyan now or not if he gives you a check? Can you stop the check? Who has to pay for the stop check? All these great questions. Real Dayanim can answer. I have no idea. But I know they talk about it. We can look into it. I'm happy to. Bezat Hashem. So good. This was a great point from Rav Moshe. And then one more point from Rav Moshe. Is that Rav Moshe says, in a communist regime, Rav Moshe lived in White Russia. In the communist regime, the government owns all the factories. There's no safek. Every factory is owned by the government. And the government is all goyim. So the kuli alma, all of their kelim require tevila. And then Rav Moshe says, if there is a safek though, if there is even a safek, if the factory belongs to a Jew or a non-Jew, and it's impossible to figure out, so Rav Moshe says, okay, take it to the mikveh without a beracha. And if it's made of glass, Rav Moshe says, don't worry about it. No tevila at all. But if you can figure it out, if there's a way for you to figure it out, is this owned by a Jew or a non-Jew? Rav Moshe says, figure it out if you want to recite a beracha. But he says, since most of the time you can't figure it out, your laziness doesn't make it into a safek. Therefore, we have to take the glass also. And therefore, anything from China, Japan, even Europe, requires tevila with a beracha, because rov factories are non-Jewish. But in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Moshe says, since the rov, the majority are Jewish, I misspoke twice, Rabbono Shel Olam, so then since rov factories are Jewish in Eretz Yisrael, then even though they're avaryanim, they're mechalei shabbat farhesia, baruch Hashem, Elohai neshama shenatata bi tehora, they're all Jewish, and therefore their kelim do not require tevila. And that's Rav Moshe's approach to this topic. There's a lot in the postgame about this idea about when you require tevila or not in terms of safek, because we have you might say rov, and therefore you can recite a beracha. Rov are non-Jews. There's a small minority that are owned by Jews. Who cares about them? We go by the rovs. They do tevila with a bracha. But in fact, it's not so simple. I told you this is Choshen Mishpat, so I'm not going to get too deep into this. Tonight is Choshen Mishpat of Tevilat Kelim. We did Yoredeya Baruch Hashem in the past 10 weeks. There is a halacha in Yoredeya, though. When you have a safek, there's different types of sfekot. There's the 90-10, there's the 70-30, and there's the 50-50. A 90-10 is a pretty good safek, pretty good robe. It's a very weak safek. 90% of the factories are owned by non-Jews. So can you rely on that to recite a bracha? You should be able to. The thing is that this isn't such a simple safek. It's a stationary one. The safek is Jewish or non-Jewish. Two options. And it's not changing. It's not going anywhere. It's stationary. It's not like you have a town with millions of visitors where you have a safek of the people in the town, are they Jewish or not? And then you have a million visitors who come in, and there's, let's say, a majority who are Jewish or a majority who are non-Jewish, and then you find a baby on the street. The safek of the town is set. And it's stationary, but the safek of the visitors, the travelers, the commuters is not so set. So when you have a stationary safek, then it's called kavua. Anything that's kavua is immediately, no matter what the ratio is, immediately considered to be 50-50. But if it's moving, it's a volatile safek, so then you would assume that it goes with whatever the actual percentage is. If most of the people on the street, most of the bandits, the Gemara says, are Jewish, so then you go by the rov. Rov are Jewish. So if you find the baby outside, then you would go by the rov.
If it's kavua, why is it 50-50?
Gemara is a rule. Why? I learned Ketuvot a few years ago. I forgot. But also, I'm going to get away with saying we're learning Choshen Mishpat and not your idea. But that's the rule. Kol kavua is kemechetz al mechetz adami. It's a good question of why. I don't remember right now. I think it's a pasuk in the Torah. Machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanan. Va'arav lo v'kama lav. Ayin sham on the pasuk. I forgot where it is, honestly. I think it's in Parashat Mishpatim. I have to double check. I have to double check that later. There's Ad Hashem. But this leads to great machloket Rav Ovadia and the Chazon Ish. About how to view kavua and safek in this situation. Avadia wrote a ton. I didn't have the brain power to learn it. I'm not in those sugyot right now. And the Chazon Ish wrote a little bit, and it's just very hard to understand. So I also didn't understand what he was saying. Avadia says, you go by the rov. Avadia holds, you go by the rov. If rov is in Chutz La'aretz is not Jewish, then you recite a beracha on the tevila. Rov in Eretz Yisrael is Jewish, so then you do not recite a beracha. You don't even have to do tefillah. And if you want to be machmir, you cannot recite a beracha. Chacham Etzion Abba Shaul is quoted in Chelek Hay of Or Letzion, Yordei Chelek Aleph, saying that kalim produced in a Jewish factory, same halacha as Rav Ovadia says, Jewish factory, it's Israel. Even if they're non-Jewish workers, doesn't matter. You don't need tefillah at all. Even if the goyim have shares in the factory, he said, Chacham Etzion disagrees with the promotion. He says, we don't look at the shares. You know, the shares don't matter to us. If the shares don't give them rights in a real way, and it's not called the shutafut, and it doesn't matter, then the shareholders are just like workers themselves, or Chacham Etzion says. And he says, unless a non-Jew is the distributor, then you would not have to worry about kalim in Eretz Yisrael. And in Chutz La'aretz, Chacham Etzion disagrees with the Chochmah Adam. He says, even if the factory is owned by non-Jews and that employs Jews, he would require tevilah with a beracha. And even more than that, Chacham Etzion is against the Chochmah Adam. Rav Belsky thinks that a Jewish-owned factory should still have tevilah without a beracha because he's choshesh for the Rama. The Chochmah Adam wanted to knock off the Rama. Chochmah Adam wanted to say that if it's Jewish owned and employs non-Jews, the Rama said, don't worry about the tefillah. Remember, we saw that in the bottom left corner right here. Employed, owned by Jews and employs non-Jews. The Shulchan Aruch says, don't worry about it. And the Rama says, yes, you need tefillah. Chochmah Adam said, safik, so you can be meka. Rebelsky says, no, you need a hold of the Rama. You need a hold of the Rama. If it's owned by Jews and employs non-Jews, you need tefillah. Because he was machmir for that point. So one second. Okay, so that was Rebelsky. Rav Schechter adds in another kink. Rav Schechter never recites the beracha in Tevilat Kelim. Because Rav Schechter says that factories are no longer owned by individuals. Companies are no longer owned by individuals. They're owned by entities. They're owned by corporations. Corporations are not Jewish and they're not non-Jewish. So Rav Schechter says there are poskim out there who hold that a corporation does not count as a human being and therefore never requires tevilat kalim if you buy its kalim. And since there are such poskim who say that whenever you buy kalim from a corporation, they don't require tevilah at all, Rav Schechter says you should do tevilah but never recite a beracha on the tevilah. And as such, Rav Schechter basically never recites a beracha on tevilat kalim. He says that the world is behind. The poskim aren't up to date. Huh?
He doesn't recite bracha on anything then.
on any tefillah kelim. Never.
No pots, no pans.
No pots, no pans. It can be a metal knife. He doesn't care. If it's probably purchased from a corporation. Corporations aren't human.
Everything is through a corporation.
So there you go.
Wow.
That's Reb Shechter. That's Reb Shechter's shita by corporations.
Who else holds by that? Any other like acharonim or poskim hold by that?
I once saw another shita holds that way. It's not on my fingertips right now. I have to look into it more.
Wait, sorry, Arav.
Yeah.
Where did you said Reb Shechter doesn't?
Because there are people who don't require tevilah for corporation sold kelim. He says safek berachot lahakel and never recites a beracha, but he does tevilah.
But he never says a beracha. He
just never recites a beracha.
Who are those that say that through the corporation one doesn't have to say a beracha?
I don't have the name at my fingertips.
Oh.
Not someone that we hold like.
Wow, that's crazy.
Not someone we hold like. Some European acharon from the past 100 years, 150 years.
So you usually Rav Avadia would hold like Safek Barachon Da'akel, no?
Right. Here we have a minhag though. But I don't know. I think that Rav Shechter says that here the postgame are not as up to date with the financial state of things. Wow. So they need to update the psak, but they're behind. There are a few things he says that about. The psak, but they're behind.
That's crazy.
So basically, we discovered if the factory is owned by a Jew, and meaning its raw materials are owned by the Jew, there's lots of room to say the kelim do not require tevilah. And as long as we can guarantee they remain in Jewish ownership until they reach the consumer's possession, that's fine. And if it's owned by a non-Jew, you definitely have a problem, according to Maran. And the Chochman Adam wanted to find a kula, and it's highly debated amongst the Acharonim whether or not that kula is accepted. But we know, if it's owned by a Yid, the materials are owned by a Yid, there's plenty to rely on to not require tevilah. That said, can you use this as a tool, as a mechanism, as a strategy to produce kelim in such a way that tevilah is not required? I'm sure you've been to Everfresh or other such stores where they have kelim that are aluminum pans or the like, and it says tevilah not required. Or you go to a Jewish-owned flatware store, houseware store, and they have urns and other things that says tevilah not required. Sometimes it's in Hebrew, and not everyone understands that tevilah is not required. But even my air fryer, sorry, not my air fryer. My air fryer is sold to me by a Jew, but I don't know if he's the actual owner or not. We'll talk about that another time, the air fryer. It's a whole shayla to talk about. But there's lots of kelim that come like that. So how do you do that? How do you pull off this shtick to make sure that you mass produce kelim that don't require tevilah? For Shulchan Aruch, it's all about ownership. For the Ramah, it's about ownership and getting out of uman pone b'shvach kli. For the Chochman Adam, it's even easier. Just safik bracha, safik deraita, the rabban on the kula on this. How are you supposed to do it? So this is where I want to introduce you guys to the concept of kinyanim. The Torah of kinyanim is very, very special. It's how you make everything happen. It's how you transfer ownership of an object, of a piece of land, of a person, from one to another. And kinyanim, there are a number of them, and they each come with different kinks. This one only works on movables. That one only works on land. This one only works for Jews. That one is only deoraita. The other one's only derabanan. All sorts of different ways of doing these different kinyanim. And as such, because there's so many different kinyanim and so many different ways to do them, some of them only work deoraita, some of them aren't, we have to figure out a way to get somebody to purchase all of that material sitting in China and to have it processed, manufactured into whatever kli we want, and sent to us to sell in our stores without any interference from a non-Jew. How do you do that? So I'll tell you. Rabbi David Cohen, who is the source for much of the kashrus part of this of our chabura, says that there is a company that sends a mashkiach to China, and he's present at the production line for all the runs for this product. He pays with money He does a kinyan ma'ot. He pays money for all of the raw materials. And then he takes a forklift, because this is not one little kli, it's not one little pot, it's lots of material, bars and bars of silver and steel and whatever else. He takes a forklift and he does a hagbaha. He lifts it up with the forklift and he does a meshicha. He drags it, he pushes it with the forklift. And that's how they're kona every single time. Chavibi, that's not practical. It doesn't scale.
Rabbi, he does that to every single pallet?
Does that to every single pallet. Are you, it's crazy. And he has to be there for days, probably weeks.
He lives there. If that's
right? It's crazy. It's crazy. It's probably not happening all year round because I doubt they have that much business. But it's not simple stuff.
Why not? It's a factory.
No, but I'm saying how many Jewish runs are there in the factory? The factory will produce. You bring the stuff. But how many Jewish runs are there anyway?
Right.
So all of that said, it's not so practical. These things take time. There's lots of moving parts. It's not one spot in the factory. It's expensive. It's not logistically possible. And plus, apparently in that case, it's just a wire and it's not a kinyan ma'ot. So it's a question. Do you have to pay all the money up front, millions of dollars, or do you pay some of it and then you take the rest as a loan? Either way, that's called a zakifat milveh, taking the rest as a loan with your tab. So since that's not so possible, we have to find other means of doing things. Well, let's investigate a little bit about what the kinyanim are and how to do them. I'm going to introduce you to a little bit of them right now.
Rabbi, what would be the problem if, forgive me for interrupting.
Sure.
What would be the problem if, let's say, they told the factory, just don't install this one screw. Let us install this one screw when we get it.
Right. Like the Chochman Adam from last week, about break it and put it back together.
Exactly.
It might not scale so well, number one. Number two, it has to be Masa Uman. And anyway, you have to make sure that it's not usable as a kli in the meantime. So that one screw has to be a pretty important screw. It has to be like smack down in the middle. The bottom. So that's practically speaking, it might not be so simple, you know, for aluminum pans.
A hot water urn or something like that.
A water urn, yeah. You have to figure out, you know, what the case is going to be. But it also has to be worth your money if you want to pull off something like that. Factory scale, mass production is not simple. One piece of paper, that I remember when I was working at Blue Apron, you know, they were saying how if you want to add a piece of paper with extra directions for whatever it is into the box of ingredients that they send somebody, it'll cost them millions of dollars. So when you're shipping 800 million boxes a month, 80 million boxes a month, so then, yes, one piece of paper times 80 million is going to be millions of dollars. So you have to find out. I imagine these Hamish companies don't have such scale. But we have to figure out what exactly the case is going to be. Fine. So let us continue into what is exactly going on here. There's about six or seven different kinyanim here that we can do. The first two are called ma'ot. Ma'ot means paying with money. Ma'ot means coins. And there's meshicha / hagba'ah. Meshicha means pulling, dragging, and hagba'ah means lifting the item. Problem is, it's Machloket Amoraim, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, which one works for Goyim and which one does not. On top of that, it's Machloket Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam how to paskin. And Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both say one has to be Machmir both ways if you want it to work min haTorah. And because of that, you have a little bit of a problem. We have this halachic challenge of, according to Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, one or the other one doesn't work. Plus, we have the logistical issues of money, hagbah, getting someone present there is not always so simple. What else can we do? Well, kinyan number three is Dina de Malchuta, law of the land. In this case, an oral agreement. An oral agreement is enough to affect, in our land, a kinyan. These things, by the way, are all very important by Pesach time, because we need to sell our chametz. We're not allowed to own chametz in the Torah. And we need to sell our chametz in order to not violate Bal Yera'eh, not owning chametz in the Torah. So we sell our chametz with as many kinyanim as possible because each of these kinyanim has a kink and a problem. This one doesn't work with goyim. That one doesn't work for non-Jews. Whatever it is. And this one's only derabanan. I said non-Jews and goyim. Whatever. Derabanan or non-Jews often is the problem. But so we do six or so different kinyanim when we sell our, according to the Netivot HaMishpat and the Ketzot HaChoshen, two major works on Choshen Mishpat. We do six different kinyanim every Erev Pesach with our non-Jewish friend who buys all of our chametz. He can't possibly pay for all of the money up front, but he takes it as a loan. It's a kifat milveh, as we said, in order to ensure that our chametz is sold min HaTorah. If not for that, then we, according to somebody, the kinyanim we did wouldn't work. So we have to do all six of them because nobody disagrees with all six of them working. Just everybody disagrees on one of them. So you have to do all six in order to be yotze. So we do ma'ot. We do meshicha and hagba. Things you can't do meshicha and chametz because the goy is not coming into your house to pick up all your chametz. So knock that one off for Pesach. We do minag asochrim. In other words, it's also called situmta, is what the Gemara calls it. Situmta, they used to write something on the barrel. And that was the minag asochrim. That's how they determined that this was sold. So, and then they do a handshake, and that's called a handshake. In our common culture, a handshake is also an effect of doing a kinyan. Minag asochrim. The problem is that dina de malchuta and minag asochrim are as machloket if they work min haTorah with goyim. So, a bit of a problem. Plus, you also need to figure out what's the minag hamakom, minag asochrim in China, and what's the din of the malchuta in China. That makes things additionally difficult. But then there's kinyan chatzer. Chatzer is great. I buy a piece of land, and I acquire all the movables on the land. So what they do is, Rav David Cohen says, what they do is they buy the land, and they make an agreement with the shtar to buy the land from the goy and the factory. And they have the factory people take the forklift and put all of the materials in the spot. And they put all the materials in that space of the forklift that they bought, the chatzer. And this way they acquire everything and then it goes through production and that way they own it. Rav David Cohen says, First of all, chatzer might not work min haTorah. Some people don't hold it works min haTorah. Plus, you can't, Plus, you have to make sure that whatever is containing the materials will also belong to you, because you can't purchase something that with chatzer that's in somebody else's kelim. And finally, who says that they are actually taking the same materials, putting it in your chatzer, taking it, producing it, and sending it to you? There's nobody watching. Nobody knows if this is the same stuff that they claim they gave to you and then put in a box and sent to you. And on top of that all, what exactly are they putting there? Only the metal? What about all the plastic? What about all the other stuff that's going into the kli that they're selling you? Remember, we said that the tafel also has to go with the ikar. If the ikar is chayav in tevila, so the tafel is also. So it's not so simple. You have to take a stance on whether or not you just have to own metal or anything that touches the food or the whole kli. What exactly is going to be the halacha in those situations? And finally, agav. Not really finally, but agav is... Aryeh, do you have to daven Arvit? No? Joe, do you have to daven Arvit? You're good? Okay.
I do.
Okay, fine. So Joe, with your permission, I'm gonna if Matt and Aryeh are down, I'd rather finish this so that we can continue on to the next topic next week.
It's being recorded, no?
Yeah, I'm recording also. So you'll be listening to catch the last.
Yeah, week. I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Rabbi. No, right.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I lost track of the time. Okay, so
Rabbi, keep going. We'll be here all night.
Listen, if you guys are down, I'm happy. I got another half an hour of stuff to say. If you guys are down, I'm down. But I feel bad keeping you home, keeping you learning. Okay. No, you have other learning to do, other chavrutot to go to. So Agav is basically a very cool kinyan. If you rent a piece of land from me anywhere in the world, let's say I come to your house, I rent a piece of land from you in your backyard. I buy a piece of land from you in your backyard. I can use that to be koneh from you, or to be koneh from you, anything you own anywhere in the world. All I need to do is be koneh this piece of land, and agav, meaning along with that piece of land, I can be koneh anything else in the world. So that's often what we do with the goy for Pesach. We rent him a piece, we sell him a piece of land somewhere, and with it, he acquires all of the chametz and all of these properties that he's buying. And that works. So now it's just a problem. Some of the Baalei HaTos would say that doesn't work min HaTorah. And we want everything to work min HaTorah. And on top of that, you need a mashkiach to be there to do it. If there's no mashkiach there to do it, it doesn't work. And you also have to make sure that all of the materials are already owned at the time that you make the kinyan. If the materials are not owned at the time that you make the kinyan, so then you got nothing. If the materials are not owned at the time you make the kinyan, then if they're going to come later, so then your kinyan doesn't help you right now. Finally, the last kinyan is the kinyan chalipin. Kinyan chalipin is a sudar, a handkerchief. A handkerchief is also works min HaTorah. It's a question if it works by a goy or not, though. You lift a handkerchief to demonstrate a greater level of commitment to this issue, to this to whatever is going to happen. So that's what we do at the chuppah. The chatan lifts the pen or the handkerchief to commit himself and to be mishabed himself, to subserviate himself and all of his property to the wife's ketubah. It shows a greater level of commitment to what's going on. The problem is that it doesn't necessarily work for a goy, and you also need a mashkiach present for the kinyan. So all in all, we've counted 7 kinyanim. Each one has its ups, its downs. We had ma'ot, meshicha, even the malchuta, minagasochrim, chatzir, agav, chalipin. Nobody rules out all 7 of them, but they are all things that we would have to do in order to, as much as we can, in order to make sure that this works. And plus, you have to make sure the distributor is Jewish. And a little kula, though, for you, is there's a machloket if kinyanim midirabanan work on the level of deoraita. The chachamim have the power of hefker beit din hefker, and they can totally make everything hefker and be makne from one to another. So it's a machloket whether this is valuable or not, but there are rishonim and acharonim who hold that even kinyanim midirabanan work on deoraita. So that would help us a little bit here as well. But again, in kashrus, we want to make sure everything works all the way. And we can't necessarily include that. That is the topic of factories. Factories, ownership, and staffing is important. And on top of that, we have to figure out how do you judge, based on where you are, the percentages of factories. If you don't know where it's coming from, that are Jewish and non-Jewish, how do you work with that? Does it recite a beracha or do it to be at all? And finally, we discussed what are the ways, if any, of mass producing kalim that don't require tevila at all. It's not so pasha that the stores that you're going to go to are owned by a Jew, even if it's a Hamish store, might be a non-Jewish partner in there. Always have to figure these things out. It's not so simple. It looks like we're not going to have, we're already a little over. Otherwise I would have gone into the Pesach Shaila of selling kalim with chametz in them. We'll do them as Hashem next week. That'd be better that way. We'll do that one next week. I'll pause here, guys. Thank you very much for coming. Any last questions? No? Okay, good. Baruch Hashem. Thank you for a great chavura. This was wonderful.
But Arav, if you could figure, I'm still very interested in who Rav Schechter.
Yeah, I can ask him.
If you could figure that out.
I'm going to work on that. A little bit more this week, Lee Nether.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem at all. Be well, guys. That's the Chareva.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you.